Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. Red Eyes TV, Henrik here. It's great to have you all with us. Hope you're having a wonderful day wherever you are. It's always a pleasure of you joining us. And today we have an interview with Tim Murdoch, or you might know him as Horace as well, of course, over at White Rabbit Radio. It was a while ago since we spoke with Tim, so it's great to have you back. Thank you, thank you for coming on again.
Oh, it's great to be here. It's always great to be on Red Ice.
Hopefully, and this time we see you as well.
Yeah.
Video.
Yeah, I'm on video these days.
That's right.
Some video.
Yeah.
So moving in that direction, crawling.
You guys
not up to Red Ice speed yet.
Well, you guys are doing good though, and you should point that out too. You're starting with it's White Rabbit Radio live, basically. It's every Saturday, is it?
Every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, we are on. We record our large podcast. We have a large weekly podcast that we've converted because we're recording it anyways. I figure let's just start live streaming it to the YouTube channel, which has all our animations on it. And so we did some test runs because I was seriously concerned with it blowing up or something. Not so much too many viewers at once. I was worried that a percentage of the podcast listeners would show up and we wouldn't have enough moderation and stuff because YouTube, well, there's no free speech there. And so we went on the backup channel for a few weeks and got everything worked out. And then we moved from the backup channel to the main channel. And so far it's been doing good. It hasn't gotten too out of hand. I'm just worried. Well, I'm not so much worried anymore because we got moderators, but I was worried at first that it would go like one of our first animations that took down two channels in the course of a week.
When was that? You know, what year was that?
How Whites Took Over America. Oh, God. 2011, maybe?
Yeah.
2012.
So for people to
2011.
Think
2011.
So for people to think that the censorship thing, that's all the fad these days, right? That for those who think it's a current thing, no, they've been doing this for 10 years, longer even.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the thing. I mean, with YouTube, I found out the hard way. If you're not successful and only get a few hundred views, it's not a big deal. But if you have, let's say, 100,000 views overnight in an animation, and anything right wing, remotely right wing, animation wise, is going to go wild on YouTube. Probably video as well if it's done well, but animations especially because there's so few of them. So we brought out this animation, How Whites Took Over America, and everyone was totally unprepared. And how it was set up, and it just didn't expect it to do anything like that. And it got slammed twice. And then after that, we got serious. Like, we got to moderate everything and had to not allow comments on certain animations beyond some mornings you'd wake up and 80% of the comments were violations of community standards. And, you know, those draconian rules were only going to apply to us. So we started going down that road, and that was the concern with the live stream, you know. Getting 10 to 20% of the podcast listeners on there and not having moderation for the comments and stuff like that. Now they've introduced a new beta. I was talking to Lana about this. The new beta on YouTube, which is what they're going to. There's been so many complaints, and I think they're worried about lawsuits on what constitutes community guidelines. Because community guidelines is like a moving target. It only really applies to anyone on the right. And they've got a new beta that automatically flags what they determined to be hate speech. So we've got the new moderator beta on, which it's not my word for it. My word for it would constitute hate speech, but it's
how does
this
it work?
Have
you seen it? Have you seen it operate? I've seen some people talk in real time that it removes it or like
what it does is it flags certain things really aggressively, and that's what they're going with. Anything they do, we will have to continuously operate on the models that worked in the last days of the Soviet Union. As soon as the authorities catch on to certain code words, you're going to have to invent new ones. And then they're going to put those in the computer, and then they're going to invent new ones again.
That's right.
And again, and again, you know. It's a continuous process until the Soviet Union collapses. The USSR.
That's what we call it. Yeah, it's amazing.
The USSA.
It's amazing. I mean, we talked about that last time you were on, and it's, I mean, it's not even nudged itself in that direction. It has steamrolled. It has gone in 100 miles per hour in that direction. Even the last year, 6 months, and definitely after the Christchurch shooter, there is now wall-to-wall coverage about blocking supposed white nationalism, white supremacy. YouTube is changing algorithms. There's hearing set up by Nadler on white nationalism. It's a global phenomena. They need to crack down everywhere. What's happening? Why is it changing so fast?
This was the response that we were actually expecting long, long before it happened. In our particular models that we were so successful with in rolling out, like words like anti-white and white genocide. I mean, imagine this, Enric. Me and you are at the FBI. Can you imagine that day? We're watching the campuses on America. And this is the analogy. This is the real analogy from Bob Whitaker would give you if he were alive. And you're watching the campuses on America. And all of a sudden on the college campus, we're in the anti-subversion division of the FBI. We're watching the college campuses and we see a bunch of ne'er-do-wells set up and start controlling terminology, start imposing terminology. Words like racist, words like anti-Semite, no one's ever seen them before, are starting to be imposed broadly. Next thing you know, they're demonstrating some type of mass communication skill, and they've got contacts in Hollywood. They got contacts in New York. Well, the first thing the FBI is going to do if you're an anti-subversion is you're going to get after that. The problem with America is the First Amendment will always make America open to subversion. But the problem with that is it'll always make it open to counter-subversion. In other words, a group following the same path can take things back. If, this is a big if they have a new form of communication, maybe a new media, or they take over the old media, we had a new form of communication, which is more radical, the interwebs, which we're talking on now. Then you've got to wait about 15 to 20 years. So White Rabbit Radio, the first podcast, is maybe 10 years old today. Somewhere in this time period, 2009, the first underground podcast I voiced, for a year and a half, we were anonymous, or 2 years. However, I'd have to look back at the actual dates, but you get the picture. So when you start going down this road, when you see the SBLC operating the way they do, that's their job. The FBI, any source they have at the FBI, you know, if you see some kid walking down the street putting up stickers, it's okay to be white. The FBI can't really get involved in so much of that. The state police can give them, or the local police can find them if it's littering or if they're violating some particular law. But this is where the SBLC comes in. The SBLC operates like a little private Stasi, because where we couldn't get away with anything at the FBI, some private organization could find out who these cultural Marxists are operating on campus, who's subverting things, try to get them fired from their job. A private organization could do all those things. Under the same banner of free speech, you know, calling their employer, organizing the various different things the SBLC organized. That's what they're operating as, counter-subversion. The challenge with the SBLC, as well as their partner, sub-partner, ADL, and whoever else was with them in Charlottesville, these guys waited till memes were on fire coming down the street, and then they threw some giant event, and that event's still not over with yet. We don't know what's going to come out of that. I wouldn't expect everything to end up perfect for them 10 years from now in regards to Charlottesville. Yeah, in the short term, they've wrecked a lot.
No, perfect for them already. Look at what's happening now. It's collapsing,
right?
SBLC.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm not saying they can't wreck lives. They can certainly wreck our lives.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm not saying they're not going to take away my PayPal. That's already gone long ago. But these guys were not doing their job. Their job is just like us. Our job is to do something, figure out an angle to do something as soon as you see any type of subversion. And now you have a group at the top of America, at the top of Western civilization. It's not a big group, but they've subverted everything. And their job at the SBLC is to make sure it doesn't get subverted back. And it's going to be subverted back in the same way it was subverted. And that's at the language level, period. End of discussion. It's not subverted back with tanks rolling down the street or even big shooting events. No, that typically perpetuates the system, unless you have a state actor involved. I mean, the average guy or Joe isn't going to make a difference doing anything violent. But the message stuff, what we think of as memes, these little packets of mass communication, have wreaked havoc, totally disrupted the system.
They have.
Totally disrupted their particular model, which is what they're designed to do, which is legal.
So far,
now
so
making,
far. Well,
yeah,
look
now
at
they're making,
the EU, right? Article 13, 11, link taxes, meme block. Now they claim that, oh, well, that's not going to happen. It's all fine, but I doubt that. What do you make of that?
I think they're having to go so broad. You see, this is the thing. Let's use an analogy. We're at the FBI. There's only a handful of guys on college campus. There's a handful of guys in the media with some amount of media talent. That's easy. You wait until you have to define white nationalism as anyone that's pro-white, or any, which is really anyone that's not anti-white, anywhere in Western civilization, and you've got all your gun groups, you've got all your, just think of the numbers. Think of how broad, look at how broad they've went post-Trump. Anyone white that disagrees with them basically is a Nazi.
That's right.
Anyone that watches Tucker Carlson or agrees with Tucker Carlson at any point is a white nationalist. Because these guys are all white nationalists to them. You know, it's just, it's crazy. And this is what they have to do, and this is how things end. I don't know how much collateral damage between them there and here and exactly what path they're going to take, but they can only, of course, shut it down or try to.
And that's what they're doing. It's a massive clampdown. Even YouTube, of course, they've changed their algorithms, and the related videos is not showing up in the same level again. They've updated this continuously, and, you know, a lot of YouTubers, they have seen, you know, this wreck havoc with their views and stuff like that. You know, you have that alternative research report, alternative influencers, I should say, network report, the Data and Society released. YouTube basically picked up on that and said, yep, we'll follow suit. All the creators, every channel that was mentioned in that, we take in, we make sure that they never show up as related or recommended videos again. Massive drop for some YouTubers.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Anti-racist Hitler, our animations don't cross certain lines. We're looking to get out a message, and sometimes the best way to do that is there's a certain amount of subtlety, and there's the line is obviously blurred. With anti-racist Hitler, it was banned in dozens and dozens of countries I never even heard of. Some of the names of these countries that's banned are just funny. These little islands out in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, come on, you know. And then one morning we woke up in the last, it's been the last 6 months or so, anti-racist Hitler was finally blacklisted or whatever they called it.
This is the link I'm clicking in on right now for you.
You've got to sign in.
Yeah.
They finally did that. That took them quite a while because there is no violence in it. It's all language.
Yeah.
The language isn't even incendiary. It's all language they use. It's just Hitler using it on the Jews in Israel, which makes it a little aggressive propaganda-wise.
It's fun. But I mean, it's fun. Yeah. It
doesn't violate any community guidelines, though.
No.
The problem is, this is why they're going to this electric moderator, which isn't what we call it, but it's what it is. It's an electronic moderator. And, you know, that way everyone can follow one set of rules, right? And it's like in the EU, they want to upload stuff. And as they upload stuff in the EU, they're going to basically decide what the standards are right then and there, instead of trying to police it afterwards. So I think they're trying to do that to head off big First Amendment lawsuits in America for some way, shape, or form. I don't know how it's going to work, though.
No one knows how it's going to work. That's what's so interesting about it. Like, does this mean, again, I referenced this in another show recently, and I was talking about, you know, so far what we've done with the show, for example, me showing this article right here, that would be copyright protected under this new proposed law. That means I couldn't even comment on news. We couldn't show articles. We couldn't show snippet of text. We couldn't show an image. You would basically, I don't know what would happen. And either YouTube will get the approach that we're just not going to operate in Europe, or all that content is not going to be available in Europe, or
PewDiePie is done.
That's all he does. Meme reviews.
Yeah, it's all any of us do is comment on the, you know, the anti-white status quo in one shape, way, manner, or form. And I don't know. This is no man's land.
No one has been here before. It's a brave new world. but, you know, they're pushing ahead. And it's a pretty ballsy risk that they're taking, though, in doing this, letting the kids, destroying the kids' internet like this. I mean, surely it can't be good.
No, it can't be good. Well, what they're doing is you're going to end up with multiple internets on the planet. You already got one internet in Russia. They're preparing their own internet for whatever reason they haven't revealed to us, other than kind of the obvious one. We'll may end up with several internets that we can access via satellite. It's like, you know, that's going to be the new pirate radio.
the dark webs, right?
There you go. Yeah. The dark webs for sure. But this is no man's land, you know, but this is a reaction that was inevitable. I'm surprised it took them so long. That's what always surprised us, that it took them so long. Because if you understand it from a counter subversion, they've subverted a society and they don't want anyone to subvert it back. If the longer you let it go, the bigger fire you have, and it's impossible to put out. And it's I mean, you can throw me in jail or whatever for speech crimes, whatever.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop anything. It's actually going to exacerbate it, I think, if they did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, PewDiePie can't do meme reviews because that's 80 million people. I'm sorry, 91 and a half million. Yeah. Sorry. I can't keep track. But he's not going to be able to hold up signs for white genocide or whatever else he's done. He's done all kinds of crazy stuff because PewDiePie has no limits, usually.
That's true.
For We've European, it's pretty rare.
Yeah.
For European, because Europeans are typically terrified. He actually doesn't care to a certain extent. And it's going to be fascinating to watch this go forward. I don't know. But, you know, 90, whatever the number was, 90 million people and 21 million views are going to watch PewDiePie say, oh, I can't upload this. I can't upload that because of, you know, are you going to silence him completely? I don't know. Because these guys, sooner or later, PewDiePie is going to really snap. He's going to snap on camera, and then 100 million people are going to hear it. It's a little bit different. You know,
well, these guys that's why I think audiences. They hate him too, Tim, because the thing is, they just can't control it, right? It's the scary aspect of the fact that they might lose that narrative any moment, especially with an influential guy like this who has proven in the past to be however the hell edgy he needs to be to get a laugh out of people. Having
there's no meme that's off guard. What was the guys he had? He had the guys hold up the sign.
Yep, kill all bleeps. Yeah, exactly.
Kill all bleeps.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Kill all the hate speechers.
And I mean, I think the guy genuinely, he's just making jokes. I mean, he's like, it could be something else. I mean, obviously, I've seen him like Ben Shapiro's material, but that's still enough anti-liberal progressive, if you will, that it's like, you know. He's not under control. I mean, the establishment is basically calling him a Nazi, right, at this point.
He's let some code out that they understand, potentially. He's not on their side. There's no way. You know, we get into this commentary all the time, going way back, on when to expect the contextual pro-whites, the contextual anti-whites. And did you read any excerpts of Tucker Carlson's latest book?
I did not.
Okay. Well, you got chapter after chapter on the neocons. Now, there was a time in America when Bill Buckley would label something like that coming from Joseph Sobran, who wrote the foreword to Bob Whitaker's Why Johnny Can't Think and a lot of other stuff, contextual anti-Semitism, because he's mentioning a certain group without mentioning a certain group. When you have a lot of dominant memes somewhere like the interwebs, just going crazy, the contextual stuff becomes highly dangerous because it starts reaching larger and larger audiences. It provides a massive incubation chamber. And it's almost like a greenhouse effect, I've heard it described as, but it is an incubation chamber. It broadens it very rapidly. And that's what PewDiePie does. That's what Tucker Carlson does. Tucker Carlson's not anti-white. PewDiePie's not anti-white. I've seen his girlfriend. If you're anti-white in somewhere where PewDiePie lives, you can show it by dating, you know, or marrying whoever, but he's marrying a girl that looks like a native to his country, you know. You seen his fiance, Henrik?
Yeah, she's Italian.
Yeah.
What's her name again? Marcia, I think. Marcia?
Yeah. She looked like a girl right from Northern Europe, but she's Italian.
She almost does.
They look white to me, all I know.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, she looks white.
So... when you get into this contextual business, contextual pro-white, contextual anti-Semitism, for lack of a better phrase, where guys are saying things, but they're not going over the edge. You know, they're not associating with something alt-right or something white nationalism. Never will, because it's, well, you get thrown in jail in some countries now, you know. But this is the type of thing, you know, that drives the system crazy. It isn't just one side, the overt side like yours truly, will say diversity is a code word for white genocide or something. It's the other side of the equation as well. And it's the incubation chamber. It just starts creating a larger and larger and larger problem. And that problem is meta-sized. so big that the only thing they can do is, you know, shut down everything. I guess. What other road is there to go down?
Well, that's just it. You know, what do they have left? Because I think they're more, showing some pictures here of Marcia. Anyway, yeah. I mean, they're pushing so hard and so fast that there's a huge risk in that. I think, including the EU, you know, articles and everything we're talking about, I think that they're risking it by the fact that so many people have already awakened to the agenda. They see what's going on. They see what's happening. And the fact is, the more they clamp down at this point, the cat's kind of already out of the bag. And I think that if they limit people's ability to speak online, let's say the worst nightmare comes true. We basically never can talk about this online anymore. I still think there's enough people that would basically take this activism out in their community. They would start talking with their friends, with their family, with coworkers, with people at the bus stop, in an elevator, and spread it that way. I think that we're talking about millions of people that would start doing that. It would effectively would take it offline, or, you know, into the real world, right?
Yeah, the technology behind sound is pretty incredible right now. The different type of acoustical physics and the research into sound and sound waves and how they work. People think of sound waves like waves on an ocean. They're not. Sound waves don't stop just when you start or stop saying something. And so there's a certain, for lack of a better phrase, resonance effect that happens when you start loading a system like this. This is very close. There's certain things we can't talk about, and the system works just fine. You start loading it from the opposite end, and it's problematic. It starts fracturing everything. You know, everything starts coming down all around as far as what's off limits for people to talk about. And then you end up with this particular scenario where you have a PewDiePie or a Tucker Carlson who aren't going too far, obviously, but online that's met with discourse that's overwhelming. Well, all you have to do is look at the largest news collators in the world right now. I pay attention to Zero Hedge. I have for years. And Zero Hedge, coming down Zero Hedge, or any of your favorite news collators, watch the comment section. You can do this at Daily Mail as well. And watch how radical the comment section is today compared to, let's say, a year or 2 years ago. It is, and when I say radical, I'm saying more and more contextual pro-white, more and more agreeing with us on various different ideals. It has become so much more radical. It's really, really astounding how this has worked. And again, this is in one particular, we're in Western civilization, and this just pumps. It's just energy pumping into the system. They're trying to say, let's shut down this energy flow. That's not going to work that way. You know, we've got a group basically saying we're going to create a position. We're going to create a system where, and we're going to implement the anti-white proposition is what I call it, which is the definition of white genocide. There can be no all-white countries anywhere, and there can be no all-white areas in the formerly all-white countries. And then they're going to start breaking it down. There can be no all-white police departments in formerly all-white countries or the formerly all-white, you know, on and on it goes. And then these guys are sitting around saying, you know, anyone that disagrees with us, well, we're not really worried about that because we'll just shut them down. The problem is that there's just too many. And then they stick their heads in the sand. They said, well, they're not really going to do anything because white people really don't exist anyways. Well, that's another recipe for disaster, you know, and the disasters will just keep coming, you know.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Tucker just a little bit because it's an interesting case. I mean, the way that he's been attacked, and you know about the whole Media Matters thing, and they're listening to hundreds of hours, and Madeline Peltz, who's like, you know, she's like, what do you call it? She's like, half of her time she spends like attacking, you know, people like Red Ice, and, you know, I'm sure she attacks you guys as well, and JF, and, you know, a bunch of other people, right? Who's more right wing, who's more dangerous than Tucker Carlson, and then working desperately to establish links between them, right? To discredit someone like Tucker Carlson. But I don't think it's working, to be honest. And it's so meagerly what they are able to bring out.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Let me give you an example. There's a new show or newer show on some cable channel called American Gods because I track this thing.
I saw a little bit of this one. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You have this piece of AI who looks human, but it's actually AI talking about normies. Normies. Now, where does this language come from? Y'all right?
4chan?
You know? Yeah, exactly. This stuff has taken over. Our side used to say, you know, the only thing that matters is the real world IRL. And that's fine. But before you hear something like rap music bouncing up and down the street, you hear it on the TV or the YouTube or anything else. The tail wags the dog. Media is a media is a very, very big deal. In the online culture, we own the internet. Everyone knows that. We've known it for a long time. We can, the ideal that you can kick out a particular meme. We had on the fellow behind It's Okay to Be White, one of the original ones.
I heard that one. It was a good week. Show. Yeah.
I call him a meme star. This is a young guy. It actually surprised me because he told me I've heard a couple of shows and watched the animations. This kid's listened to everything I've ever said five times. He didn't tell me that. And he's like springing rabbit language on me. Wasn't ready for it at all. With that being said, these guys can kick out a meme, run it down 8chan, 4chan and have it all over the planet within hours. It used to take us days and months of building. No sooner than a narrative comes out on something like Christchurch, some big tragedy. The counter narrative online within hours, multiple shooters. And this just astounds me how fast this is. It's not 72 hour counter narrative. It's not like the 72 hour media cycle. It's like 30 minutes, an
Indeed.
Hour.
Yeah.
And these are big channels pumping out this stuff that all go against the establishment narrative in every way, shape, manner, or form. I always say anyone that's against the establishment is always put into the alt news bracket. And they've done this for years, and it was the stupidest thing to do.
It's true.
It was, because you have a lot of people on this planet that disagrees with the people in Washington and London and Tel Aviv and Brussels, It's just really ridiculous.
It's true. It's a big risk of doing that. It's basically they're creating huge swaths of enemies by just kind of lumping them together and generalizing and actually not. I mean, we know that they always exaggerate, but with the amount that they exaggerated and the willingness that they took just not even orbiters, like people are not even related to certain topics, they just bunch them all in together and just call them names and attacks them for being immoral human beings. I mean, that turns them against those kinds of organizations. And again, I think that's why we're seeing some kind of reprisal is coming back and biting the SPLC in the butt right now. There's several lawsuits against them. Maurice Dees, the co-founder, he was fired. You have Richard Cohen, the current head, I believe, he resigned just a couple of days ago. There's an internal investigation. There's people
it's
saying...
It's very important for anyone behind those lawsuits to get discovery. Because I'm curious about, if the rumors are true... Because these guys were doing their job for years. They were set up as counter-subversion. They wrecked a lot of different white rights, identitarian-like groups early on. They had the big contacts with the government agencies. And then, of course, they let this whole entire meme thing, this whole entire alt-right thing, go all the way to Charlottesville. They were doing their job, then all of a sudden they weren't. It's like they were on vacation or counting their hedge fund winnings. And the rumor always was, and it's just a rumor, I can't prove anything, is that this big, all these offshore accounts and this big nonprofit organization was actually a money laundering deal to some extent or another.
Yeah.
Which is,
very
I can't prove
bizarre.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a lot going on there, and I guarantee you they're going to fight like hell not to have to do any type of discovery or disclosure of those finances, because there's got to be something in there. These guys are stepping down now. These original guys are stepping down now. Are they actually stepping down because they're a liability to the organization for reasons we don't see? Or is it just about their degenerate behavior, which has been noted over the years, especially one of them, in those divorce proceedings, which are notoriously inaccurate, but, who knows?
Who knows, right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. They should be pointed out. Anybody can say anything in court documents and allege something that doesn't make it true. But it's interesting that we've seen that kind of, not only the SPLC, other groups as well, Tim. We've seen this kind of, those that point the finger most and blames other people and calls them immoral usually does it because of projection, right? They have a need to point out how bad other people are so that they, in fact, will be shielded and protected behind that. And it's been true with this whole Me Too movement and everything, right? I mean, that turned, it bit all the people in the ass, basically, that were promoting it.
Well, they're circling the wagons there. They brought in this T Chen, and I don't even know the pronunciation of her name. This is the same lady that just got is getting hammered over the Jussie Smollett stuff in Chicago. T Chen took over on their board. This Michelle Obama's chief of staff or whoever it was from the Obama administration took over on the SPLC board. And they're circling the wagons on stuff, and they've got her embroiled now in the Chicago deal with Jussie Smollett, which I don't think will go anywhere because these guys get away with whatever. But whatever's going on with this massive nonprofit organization that Apple had on TV, you know, Apple's raising money for, all these guys are raising money for, they got $500 million that we know about. They got a lot of hedge fund holdings. They got a lot of offshore accounts. A lot going on for a big nonprofit who chases down white nationalists. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have hedge funds and offshore accounts and everything else to do counter subversion or everything else they're trying to do. You know, make sure nothing takes hold in America that can counter their message, basically. But these guys have a lot of fishy stuff going on right now, and they've got some big lawsuits. They're not listening to the Jordan Petersons. Jordan Peterson's telling these guys, you're putting everyone in the same camp. You're putting everyone on the same side.
Yeah, they've been warning about that. They said, don't do it. Slow down. You're angering angering all these people.
The SPLC, it's like the, you know, the SPLC hate list for Michigan has blogs. They have people that criticize Sharia law. I forget how extensive it is, but their hate list in South Carolina at one time, the funniest thing I've ever seen is they had Bob Whitaker, his website and his blog as two separate hate groups. This is the craziest thing ever, you know.
Well, you got to prove that they're all around, you know. Exactly. Vast amount of numbers, and yeah, I mean, they're obviously they would be cooking the books. This is how they operate. It's smear campaigns, it's underhanded tactics, misquotations, character assassination, building up straw men. This is, and I mean, and again, this has been a multi-million dollar industry for these people to do it this way.
Huge.
And I mean, there must be something behind this that they've been, you know, fuddling the numbers, or and I think there was admissions.
I don't believe that the council, the head council stepping down, I don't think all these people are stepping down just from sexual harassment. That might be partially true, but I'm not buying that. They're worried about something in one of these lawsuits.
Yeah, the ship is sinking now, and the rats are fleeing. That's basically
If they survive this test, they'll be a lot meaner with this T-Chen lady, because what she showed in Chicago is she can make a phone call and Jussie Smollett, 16 felony counts. The guy walks with community service. Oh my God.
Yeah.
If this was Henrik Palmgren, you'd be in jail for 100 years. Minimum.
Right. So what do you think is behind that then? I mean, Chicago police, as I said in this tweet here, that they've been barred from discussing even the investigation.
I mean, is Jussie the black Jesus? Is he God? What is he?
I think he's well tied in, obviously. I mean, I think that there's a bigger setup. Remember, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, they're running now as presidential candidates for the Democrats. They were launching this anti-lynching bill, remember? And it was very convenient that Smollett showed up at the same time with his noose around his neck, you know? Fake, of course.
Yeah. Maybe he was doing it with the help of other people, told him to do
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. High up other people, right? Soros, do you see that article? Sure. Soros were paying off this, was it the attorney? I'll pull it up in a moment here, but he invested like, $300,000 into some, special group that was tied to this one, was it an attorney or something? I'll pull it up here in a moment, but some of his dark money, as they call it, was behind, the person who dropped the charges.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's just all the same group over and over again, pulling nonsense. It's just, they're doing it right in front of a lot of enemies. You know, Illinois, though, is terrible. Illinois is terrible as far as the left wing. They can get away with anything there, I would imagine. But at the same time, they're just drunk on power running around doing this stuff. And you never know where this is going to go or what twist and turn. But that shocked me. So my guess is someone had to let him off. That makes sense.
George Soros spent $408,000 on prosecutor in Jussie Smollett case.
Wow.
New details tonight in the bombshell case of Jussie Smollett records Records now show that the left-wing billionaire megadonor George Soros and huge funder of Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, that's right, that's the person I was going to mention, it's Fox's office who prosecuted and suddenly dropped all pending charges against Empire actor Jussie Smollett, and Chicago police are outraged. And again, now they've been barred from even talking about the case. They have a stack, what is it, 8 inches thick on all the stuff that they've dug up about this, and they can't touch it now.
Yeah, this is problematic. I wonder how much of Rahm Emanuel's speech is BS and how much of it's real. You know, he gave this outrage speech that was pretty good outrage speech. Is it real, though? Is it an act? He had to know. He's a Democrat. He has to know everything going on.
He's trying to save face.
I think,
right?
I could be wrong.
He's trying to save face, I think. He's trying to get out of it because it goes deeper.
I know the policemen are pissed off.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Police union. They were trying to move this to a federal investigation. They were trying to move this to the FBI. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
That was their first move. They were trying to get it out of the hands of the Chicago police.
Oh, really? Interesting.
They were trying to move it to the FBI, these same people that ended up letting him go scot-free. I don't know all the ins and outs of how this is going to be written. The truth, you know, obviously, there's something going on. But the SPLC and this lady, T-Chen, T-C-H-E-N, I don't know how it's pronounced. She's a chubby Asian lady, and she is now sitting on the board of the SPLC. And that's kind of coincidental to all this. This has been going on before that. And, you know, it's kind of a big deal. There she is right there.
Is it that? Oh, okay. Yeah. You tweeted this
James
out.
Woods is tweeting her out with snake eyes. But she is the actual...
it doesn't load right now for some reason. Okay, well, you guys can see her right there anyway.
Yeah, James Wood tweeted her out, snake eyes. And it's kind of funny you tweeted out snake eyes. They might have brought him up on... He'll be up on hate speech charges before long.
I'm surprised. I was just thinking this morning. I saw something this morning I tweeted out, and it's like, this guy's never... I mean, that's already done. That ship has sailed, right? But I'm like, it came on to me like, he's never going to work a day in his life again, you know?
Yeah,
never
in Hollywood. Moving, a lot of these guys are moving into the contextual pro-white sphere.
Yeah.
You know, that's just... Anything not anti-white is going to be. That's kind of funny. They've set them up by saying that, you know, anyone pro-white is a white nationalist. Well, you're setting up the direct opposite. There's a lot of people that don't like the powers that be.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like all this anti-white stuff, and that is global. Globally, they would like to end Hollywood. If they could hit a switch and end certain parties in Washington, Hollywood, and everywhere else, they probably would.
Yeah, see, James Wood is, look at that, he's tweeting about the SPLC and stuff. I mean, he knows.
He knows.
He knows, yeah.
You can't be online and not know. This is the way this stuff works.
Yep.
Like PewDiePie, they know that he knows. We're reaching levels of knowing never seen before. He watches Tucker. He knows.
Yeah.
You can't not know. They're finding out more and more.
That's what was so problematic with YouTube, with Facebook, with Twitter. That it leads you, I mean, the popular stuff explodes and it spreads like a virus, right? And the meme is the quickest way to communicate a message. It's, you know, if a image speaks 1,000 words, a meme speaks 1,000 images, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, it's way too fast. And I think that that's for a reason. Let me play this clip here, because it's kind of interesting. It was actually Mark Dice that brought it to my attention. It's one lady behind Recode, Decoded, and it's just a snippet. She's talking with the CEO of YouTube. And again, she puts her finger on what the problematic aspect is. In other words, as you learn things, as you discover, as you realize things, obviously one thing leads to another. This is how the human knowledge collection works. But that's the problem with the internet and these platforms, that they lead you down the rabbit hole, Tim, you know, down the rabbit hole, and there we go. And you're into areas which you're not supposed to be into. So let's just listen to this here a little bit and see what she says. So she's talking with Susan Wojcicki, I think they pronounce it, CEO of YouTube.
Beef with you about that.
Okay. I can't wait to hear.
My son, who's 13 years old, started watching Ben Shapiro videos. And he's like the gateway drug to the next group. And then it goes right to Jordan Peterson. Then it goes down. And in 3 clicks, he was at neo-Nazi stuff. It was like astonishing. And then I had to listen to it at dinner. And I was sort of like, I'm going to kill Susan Wojcicki first.
Okay,
and then,
here I am.
But it was sort of like, I was sort of like, is there anything, like, it feels like, as I said, I think you've heard me say this, it feels like All UTEC companies have built cities, these beautiful cities, but you decided not to initially put in police, fire, garbage, street signs, and stuff like that.
And her brain damage.
So listen to that. That language is pretty interesting, though, because she's literally talking about, like, hygiene, right, in the virtual space that almost, you know, and think of the rhetoric now, what the accusations is, right, about people like us, let's say. She's talking about us like we're rats, right? We're filthy parasites that are running around plaguing up the environment, which meant to be 100% controlled by them. Do you see where I'm getting with this?
Sure. Sure. They're angry. They're upset.
Yeah. Because too many people are finding out way too much stuff, and it's going radically quickly because it makes sense, right? If it makes sense, people are like, this is great. I want to listen to this, right? And down that rabbit hole they go.
Yeah, there's a lot of intriguing stuff in the alt news category, whether it be some people listen to certain things for entertainment, but it's very dangerous to them, to their ideology, because their ideology can't have any competition and it can't be questioned.
And he never survives in competition. And that's why 4chan didn't turn out to be a left-wing plagued environment. If you have free speech, it always turns right-wing.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does, because the vast majority of Western civilization still, you know, it's still white, and men generally dominate the political discussion, and white males tend to be more right-wing. It's kind of like mathematical facts, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a problem.
So they have to terminate it. They have to risk shooting their own platforms in the foot, because obviously that's what YouTube is doing by not giving you – I mean, their whole business model is built on giving you what you want, so that you will stay on the platform and check out the advertisements too, so they can make money. If they're going to stop feeding people what they want, what's the purpose of the platform? What can we do with it?
Yeah, they're going to have a full-scale revolt on their hands, because you're talking about taking too many people down. You're not doing what Jordan Peterson is talking about doing. These guys are going broad. They're throwing out Sargon. They're throwing out they're throwing out guys that I don't like. They're just putting everyone in one camp. You know.
Yeah.
The white nationalist concentration camp.
Slightly to the right of them. And that's it. That's all. They're so, and of course, because they're dominated by, they're fearful. They can't take the competition. They're not secure in their position. They're just like, we need to just slash and burn everybody down. If you don't agree with us 100%, you're against us. And so they're declaring everyone an enemy.
Well, that's what drives the discussion. Once you start unleashing this stuff, when I say this stuff, I'm talking about memes. The reaction is what always drives it, the reaction from the other side, because the other side has enough entrenched power. And let's face it, they're allowed to get away with anything. You know, they're allowed to pretty much get away with anything. And that has driven it. It's a handful of radicals. It's probably not that many people sitting at somewhere like Facebook. It's not that many people at YouTube, but they're allowed to get away with it. You know, it's not how many people got Jussie Smollett off, but they're allowed to get away with it. And they're going to flaunt the system. They're going to go too far. This is what their own side is warning them against. But you can't control it. There's no way to stop it. It's the opposite reaction. You know, the only thing they can do is get violent, shut it down, try to do more laws. And it's just game that is the end game.
But you know what? There's an interesting kind of metaphysical thing to this, too, with meme culture. I don't know if you saw this article out of The Verge. It was called The Trauma Floor, The Secret Lives of Facebook Moderators in America, right? And it's about they're outsourcing the ability to block content on Facebook. And this involves some really radical stuff like snuff material or whatever that they put online, and they have to, like, block that. And sure, they're traumatized to a certain extent. But it was another interesting aspect in the article, and that talks about meme culture. That a lot of these people that are supposed to just kind of sit and do their job and be robots and decide does this go or not, actually started to be influenced and persuaded by the means that they were supposed to block and stop. They were actually they were converted, if you will, to a certain extent by them.
Yeah. Let me do something real quick since I have a glass here.
Sure.
This is obviously a glass, but if you were to go like this, in an eighth grade physics book, what they're going to describe this as is an oscillating system. And most people think that an opera singer or anyone that can duplicate this and bust it is breaking it because it's glass. They're not. They're breaking it because it's an oscillating system that they found resonance in. And this is the fascinating thing about sound. You can destroy things with sound waves. Proven fact. All you got to do is find resonance. Once you find resonance, you drive it at amplitude. And an oscillating system is described as a swing set in like an 8th or 10th grade textbook. It may be 12th grade by the time, you see this, education is going so far downhill. But in physics, these are all oscillating systems. And what Whitaker taught me, a guy named Bob Whitaker long, long ago, this is what he specialized in. This is one of the reasons he was allowed to operate in Washington and be so right wing. Is there is a resonance effect when it comes to something what you think of as memes. If you can ping this, you can destroy it. And he sat around for years developing what you think of as, most people think of as the white genocide mantra. But what they don't know is there's hundreds of other mantras. In their type of oscillating system that our enemies built, and this is the key point, they're closed systems. They're just like the Soviet Union. A closed system can oscillate, but it can only oscillate under certain laws of conservation. And the laws of conservation in this particular system are white people are not supposed to talk about certain things. And as long as white people don't talk about certain things, everything goes okay. It can go on forever. Well, what we want, and we want to take that swing set, we want to take this glass, if you will, we want to destroy it. We want to shatter it. And so we walked around pinging for years. He's pinging the glass, trying to find it. Words like replacement, displacement, the JQ, all the stuff that we weren't supposed to talk about, because all you have to do is find resonance. All you have to do is find the ping. And if you find it and you can build an audience, once that breaks, it's not, obviously we're not breaking a glass, but the political structure, the political dialogue is going to fracture across the board and all the particular issues that are important come rushing in. Now, typically in that type of environment, you're terrified because you need people to talk about all these different issues. In the Soviet Union, the big problem they had when that came down is no one knew anything about any other type of economics. And that allowed the neocons to come in and take advantage of the situation. In our case, we didn't care. Bob was just trying to find resonance. Where is this thing going to ping? What meme is going to set it off? The conversations, what's going to get it going? Because once it breaks in America, when it comes to the JQ, crime stats, traditional or critique of feminism, you name it, we have all the heavy hitters, all of them. And so we were only worried about pinging it. And that's what I believe he found with the white genocide stuff. It started pinging. I was convinced of it. But when it comes to memes, the reason I went into that little demonstration, once you start pinging it, once you find resonance, once you start repeating it, once you start the repetitions, the cycles start. It's one person, it's two people, it's 100 people. There's a resonance effect in this type of closed system because it's closed. We're all in a glass bubble. And eventually, it just starts exploding across the board. And now you have the contextual pro-whites, the contextual anti-Semites. You have all this going on at once, and they're trying to control it. They can't. They can't. It doesn't matter. The whole thing's already shredded. It's like trying to drink out of a glass that someone's already blown up. They realize it, but they don't want to admit it, you know? And they're going to do as much damage from here to there as they can. Our job is to survive it now.
Yeah, that might be pretty messy before it gets better, you know? And I think they'll lash out on in any way they can. They will destroy people's lives. But again, I think that's overdoing it. I think they're just pushing way too hard. And again, the more innocent people that are squeezed by this and crushed, the more, I mean, that level of aggression, as we've seen historically, never works. And the people ends up turning it. Look at as a physical representation of that, what Macron is doing to his people in France right now. Do you think more people are saying, you know what, Macron is actually doing the right thing here? No, it's the opposite. The force that's exhibited gets people to actually side with the victim, you know, in that case.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People are looking at these memes at Facebook, and this is how it works, and saying, okay, this is banned. And they're looking at it's okay to be white. They're like, what? Why is that bad? What's going on here? I mean, you're asking me to police it's okay to be white. You're saying it's not okay to be white, really. Again, we come back to square one. If it's not anti-white, it has to be banned. You know, we got too many of the white people knowing. Too many are figuring out the game. And you've got to stop this geometric progression very quickly. They didn't do their jobs, in my opinion. They might wreck us all before it's over with, those that speak out in the open. But this is the end game. Or they may do something crazy. I'm always amazed how online culture has influenced the actual mainstream media. And when you're watching Tucker Carlson, this is the funniest stuff. I've done a show on this stuff on Red Ice, more from a propaganda angle than truth angle. But he's doing specials, or he's doing bits on UFO stuff. Do you see this, Henrik?
No, I didn't. Oh, really? When was this?
He's like, you know, most news companies, most newscasters steer clear of UFOs. They're afraid of UFOs. Here on Fox News, on Tucker Carlson, we're not afraid of it. And he goes into the New York Times article and this and that, you know. I just thought it was hilarious how much online culture has influenced the regular news. Now, Tucker Carlson 10 years ago would have never touched that stuff, but now he will. You know.
It's fun. It's edgy. It's a little bit different. Yeah, exactly. And it kind of...
Well, New York Times doesn't normally write about UFOs. So if they're writing about UFOs, everyone's permitted to write about UFOs.
Well, yeah. But it's also like this idea, too, that it's confidence. You're willing to take those risks. You're out on a limb. You know what I mean? And it feels good, and you just don't care. And if you do it with confidence, it's fine. If you're tiptoeing around and uncertain about it, yeah, you'll just come out of it looking like a fool, probably, right? But just do it, and it's fine, you know? So that's interesting.
I think space is an important subject matter, because since Trump's presidency, the most significant event in my mind, people ask, what's significant? Well, one thing in my mind, and one of the big mysteries, is the space stuff. You know, right now we have total cooperation with Russia in space. On the ground, we're at war with them in Venezuela, quite literally. You know, they've got troops there. We're inserting stuff. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's this big contradiction. And since the Trump presidency, we've had, like, the military takeover of the space memes. I don't know if you've noticed this, Henrik. You've covered this stuff off and on for years. But we've got generals talking about, and now guess, you know, it's from a legitimate angle. They're talking about a space force. They're talking about protecting U.S. space assets. But it's basically been a military takeover. Even the New York Times article on UFOs, if you read it, it's a military type stuff.
Right.
Which I think is significant. It's not, you know, some CIA type typical that prior to Hillary being elected, or prior to Hillary supposedly getting elected, you know, you had all the space stuff, the UFO stuff behind this one corporation. You got a CIA guy, and then you've got the Blink 182 guy, like the famous guy. I don't know what was going on with that. I just knew there was a connection between that and Hillary, supposedly. And then when Trump gets elected, you have a total military takeover, and Pence is announcing all kinds of stuff that I don't know how they're going to do. I don't know how they're going to put counties on the moon in 5 years, whatever the announcements they're making, you know, on Mars, and they're doing some pretty over the top announcements when it comes to space. Other than the typical, we got to protect our space assets. So the idea that Tucker's covering this interests me a great deal. And he's covered the Space Force several times because it's newsworthy. Presidents don't normally announce space forces.
No.
And I'm assuming it's from a legitimate perspective. I'm not talking about invasions of the blue chickens or anything that people come up with. We're talking about, where's this going?
Right.
You know, and trying to make broader connections between some of these contextual pro-white elements and the larger culture and what's going on behind the scenes and what could be coming for us. Our job is to stay at the ground game, which is what we do well. Something comes out and we blast it across the internet, make it a mainstream conversation piece. That's our job.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Tim, we're going to take a break here in just a couple of minutes.
Sure.
And continue talking more about this. Very, very interesting. There's a lot more things I want to try to get to and bring up some other examples of the way that they're clamping down right now. We can extend that conversation too as well, of course, and see some of the other trends. You know, last time we were on the show, we kind of talked about more of the metaphysical stuff, kind of stuff you're alluding to right now and kind of leaning into. We'll see if we get into that as well. But tell us how people can obviously follow you, listen to White Rabbit Radio Live and the other shows that you have. Give us the details about this.
White Rabbit Radio Live is with a co-host, Johnny Monoxide from Paranormies and the Right Stuff. And the podcast comes out once a week. It's available on TRS, therightstuff.biz. It's also available on my site, whiterabbitradio.net. You can watch it live at White Rabbit Radio TV. We run, of course, our own little paywall at whiterabbitradio.net. And on Twitter, I'm at Eurorabbit. Facebook, too banned at Facebook. Been banned well too many times. Facebook was on to me years ago. So that's about it.
All right, whiterabbitradio.net, and check out the live show as well. You guys are just getting into it. How long have you been doing it, you said, now?
I think about a couple months. The first few weeks were like an experiment, and then we've been at the channel a few times, maybe a month.
Yeah, well, it's going well. I like it. It's always fun to tune in live, and it's a different vibe, you know?
Sure.
I like to do pre-recorded, too, sometimes, but it's nothing.
Yeah, I can imagine. Pre-recorded's a little bit easier, I would think, because you could touch stuff up.
Yeah. When you make yourself look like a fool, you can just clean that up, you know? But no.
But we do live podcasts anyways, yeah. So the ideal is to live stream some of them.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys, definitely make sure you check it out. A lot of good themes and a lot of good knowledge as well when it comes to spreading these messages and the memes and meme culture and kind of all the stuff that Tim talked about in terms of the resonance, which is a very interesting concept, very interesting theory. But yeah, let's take a short break, guys. Stay with us, Tim. We'll be right back with more in our part two. All right, guys, check out part two coming up with Tim Murdoch as we continue speaking more about the vast issues that we face when it comes to censorship and clampdown on people who basically are resisting the population replacement, open borders, and endless migration into the Western countries. We're going to talk a bit more about why they are so vehement about terminating oppositional dissenting viewpoints. We're also going to talk a bit about Israel, the Belt and Road Initiative, the Third Temple, and the Antichrist kind of material when it comes to Kushner and some of these people around Trump. You know, what's the neocons' role in this? Tim Murdoch has really interesting insights into why we see some of these trends that we do right now in terms of the movement towards both globalization, but also what Israel's role is going to be in that bigger picture. So definitely make sure you tune in. Go to redicemembers.com, sign up for a membership with us. Make sure that you can continue checking out the second part. And of course, you get access to all the other stuff as well, including Weekend Warrior and other exclusive video material. We'll be back on Friday with Flashback Friday. And then, of course, it's Weekend Warrior as usual. We have other videos to finish after that and more interviews coming up. But yeah, second hour coming up, second part. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.